is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Hello, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to the radio show. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast coming to you on your very favorite network for information and alternative truth, Truth Frequency Radio. We can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com. You can find us at redpillreports.com, and you can find us on the dial at 90.7 in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Today is the sixth day of the fifth month. That's right. The May 6th has arrived. It is a Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. Let me check my – yep, it is Wednesday today. So we're about halfway through the week. I hope you guys are doing well out there. Big, super, huge, warm welcome to everybody joining us in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com. I love having the family surrounding me every single morning. Just cannot thank you guys enough for being in there. Been trying to individually welcome people as they arrive, and the list is just getting too long. So for all of you guys out there that have just joined, really appreciate you guys taking the time out to join us in the morning. Hanging out in the chat room, I know it takes a little bit of your time and energy to be in there, so it's very cool that you guys hang out. Also, big warm welcome to everybody hanging out on the live stream today and listening in live over your phone or however else you guys are doing it. Just super, super pumped to have you guys along for the ride. We have a lot to talk about today. There is a lot of news going on. I'll give you a quick heads up. Our guest in the second hour will be the one and only James Perloff. Tomorrow, May 7th, marks the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Lusitania, which obviously, for you guys out there who are listening, we pretty much understand at this point that that was a ginormous false flag event. But the important thing to talk about today is, what the motive behind that false flag was, who was actually running the show, because I think once we start looking back in history, we'll realize a lot of those same people still running the agenda today. So once you start looking back at how the false flags were carried out, might give us a little bit of insight on how, they are going to be carried out in the future. So very excited to be welcoming the one and only James Perloff back to the program. He's an author, a researcher, and an absolute astute historian. Probably nobody I'd rather speak with about a history lesson than James Perloff. Tomorrow we will have Kenneth Shorten Jr. Kenneth Shorten Jr. will be on the show tomorrow and the second hour, ladies and gentlemen. He's a contributor to the Daily Economist. Very, very smart guy in terms of economic and geopolitical events. And I'll tell you what, we've got no shortage of economic and geopolitical events to talk about. So looking forward to having Kenneth join us tomorrow. And then on Friday, we will have Sharon Lynn Wyeth on the program. She wrote that book, Know the Name, Know the Person, talking about how there are correlations to be made between the spelling of your name and your apparent personality, and she garnished all this information as an elementary school teacher, started realizing that some of the generalizations she was making about her students, well, they were pretty accurate, actually. So she ended up writing a book. It's been wildly successful. We've had her on the program before, and it got a great response, and I'm definitely looking forward to having a enlightening and entertaining conversation with her on Friday. Speaking of enlightening and entertaining, did you guys happen to catch Nano Girl on the Kev Baker Show last night? Oh my God, new high water mark for the whole KBS crew. Absolutely wildly entertaining. I missed Marty. I'm not going to lie. Marty wasn't with us last night, but Johnny Whistles more than made up for it. I literally had to walk away from my desk. The guy had me laughing so hard, I was starting to black out. I got the tunnel vision thing going on. Absolutely astoundingly funny. And then, of course, to top it all off, we have the one and only Nano Girl on the program, basically scooping all of the science and tech stuff that I was going to tell you guys about today. So we're going to skip over some of that today, but I do recommend, I mean, highly that you guys go back and check out that download. And while I'm on the subject of the absolutely amazing KBS crew and the KBS show, I want to tell you tonight, They're going to be featuring a guest named Maria Wheatley. She is scheduled to join the show, and they are going to be talking about megalithic sites across the UK and also their connections to the ley line systems. And I bet you, a dollar to a hole in a donut, there's some sort of correlation between the ley lines, the ancient megalithic sites, and you guessed it, CERN, ladies and gentlemen. So it will be another fantastic program this afternoon here in the United States, 11 p.m. if you're there in the UK. Gonna be awesome. I will be in the chat room with you guys as well. Love that show. Yesterday was a high water mark. Okay, we probably ought to go get some news done here now. That's all I know about life in terms of what's going on the radio network. I do want to tell you, though, Rebecca Roth, I think, is getting ready to do a program here at TFR. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to start, but I will keep you guys up to date on that as we develop, because I know a lot of people really enjoy listening to Rebecca Roth speak, and I think she'd be very, very successful doing a radio show here. She's obviously going to have a lot of support from the other hosts, so definitely keep an eye out for that, and I'll keep you guys in the loop. Okay, yep, that's everything I had to cover this morning. Let's talk about the world, because it has not stopped spinning yet. Apparently CERN allowing the whole party to continue. So what's going on in the war zone areas here? Let's try and narrow it down. Doesn't really, does it? Well, new revelations coming out of Reuters this morning saying that the U.S. Navy warships have actually begun escorting British-flagged commercial vessels through the Strait of Hormuz, and the Pentagon just announced this last night. So this follows, obviously, after the seizure of the Marshall Islands-flagged vessel by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard boats last week. And the Strait of Hormuz, we've been talking about quite a bit, but is obviously a key oil passageway off of the coast of Iran. And Tehran has previously and continuously threatened to shut it off if they decide to do so. So anyway, Monday, an Iranian destroyer warned two P-3C Orion maritime surveillance planes and also the USS Winston Churchill, which is a destroyer. The Iranians warned these vehicles, or these maritime ships, against coming into their standard 5-mile distance of the Iranian Navy's 34th Fleet based in the Gulf of Aden there. So the Iranian military basically says that they are duty-bound to monitor any foreign ships in international waters, as well as anything that could threaten Iran's national interests. So you can see we're still not out of the woods yet in the Strait of Hormuz, and we have kind of upped the ante again, not only announcing that we, the United States Navy, will be escorting American flagships, but now we're rolling that out to protection for the British cargo ships as well. So just probably doubling our presence there. Obviously, you know, we've already been hanging out in the Gulf and the North Arabian Sea for a long time, but on Thursday, this is again the first time that we've started accompanying U.S. commercial vessels passing through this particular strait. So that's what's going on there. Also, there was news breaking last night on Bloomberg, quoting a state-run television organization from Saudi Arabia. So let's just put that in your mind, that this is a report coming out of Saudi Arabia, that apparently the the Houthi Yemen rebels have fired into Saudi Arabia. So again, this morning they are saying that the Houthi rebels actually launched a counter-offensive to the Saudi Arabian airstrikes and actually took out a few buildings inside of Saudi Arabia on the Najran area, which is just right there across their border. And Saudi Arabia quick to condemn the attack, coming out saying this will not pass without a response. But again, you know, since we're in the motive of false flag narratives these days, you kind of have to wonder if this was a real actual attack by these Houthi militants, or if this was something that would maybe, I don't know, give Saudi Arabia a pass to go ahead and flood Yemen with the National Guard forces that we talked about last week being called up for a alleged or a potential ground invasion. So now, of course, with this attack from Yemen onto Saudi facilities, you now have everything you need to say, okay, we got to ramp this up and we got to send the ground forces in. So again, did we just witness a false flag attack in the Middle East? Kind of difficult to say, because obviously we're not there right now. But again, most of the news reports coming out about this are from Saudi Arabian sources. So there you go. probably going to be escalating in Yemen. Here's the long story short. We've got more military presence there in the Strait. We also now have a real good positive reason if you're Saudi Arabia to ramp up the ground war. So there you go. Also, for the first time in history, Chinese and Russian navies began a pretty significant joint naval exercise in the Mediterranean Sea. We talked about that last week. They're planning on kicking that off here in about a week, so about mid-May. But in another first, as of yesterday, two Chinese warships were seen passing through the Bosphorus and entering into the Black Sea. This would be the first time the Chinese Navy has actually put themselves into the Black Sea. So we're not really sure what's going on there. But again, we're moving towards war on just about every front that you can move towards war on, ladies and gentlemen. So there you go. That's what's happening over there. A little report coming out from, let me see, make sure I get this correct, Regavim. Regavim, which is a privately owned Palestinian NGO, came out with a report this last week saying that Israel has actually built more than 2,000 structures on territories grabbed from the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, according to, this is a right-wing Israeli NGO, Regavim. So coming out of the Israeli side of things, saying that Israel has actually built more than 2,000 structures. Also added that the structures included 1,232 permanent homes and almost 800 mobile homes. Nearly 1,500 families currently live in these structures, which are scattered across a large number of Israeli settlements. And more than 500,000 Israelis live in over 120 illegal settlements built since Israelis' occupation of the Palestinian territories of the West Bank, including East Al-Quds, which is Jerusalem, back in 1967. Most of the international community regards these Israeli settlements as illegal because the territories were occupied by Israel in 1967, and hence they are subject to the Geneva Conventions, which forbid construction on occupied lands. Tel Aviv has defied calls to end these particular settlement activities, but just keeping you guys up to speed on what's going on in occupied Palestine right now. And in another major event coming out of Israel, Avigdor Lieberman, who is Israel's foreign minister, he's actually resigning after declaring that his far-right party would not be joining the new coalition government formed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The decision by a controversial foreign minister came just 2 days before the deadline for Netanyahu to form the next government in which he could have retained his ministry. But the withdrawal of Lieberman and his right-wing Yisrael Beitenu party will pose now a headache for Netanyahu because his deadline to have his coalition established was this morning, ladies and gentlemen. So Netanyahu has been pursuing a largely right-wing coalition, including ultra-Orthodox parties, the far-right pro-settler Jewish Home, led by Mr. Bennett, and the Moshe Kalon's center-right Kalanu. But without Lieberman, Netanyahu is expected to manage only the slimmest of majorities of 61 seats in the 120-seat Knesset, which means he could struggle to push through any legislation and could be vulnerable to the agendas of his partners. So Netanyahu did call for snap elections back in December for March, hoping to emerge in a stronger position, but instead, despite his own strong showing, he may emerge at the head of an even weaker government. And Lieberman says his party has been offered two cabinet posts as part of the coalition talk, but remained unsatisfied over a raft of key policies. And he says this is certainly a coalition that, to my regret, does not reflect the positions of the nationalist camp, and it is not to our liking, to put it mildly. And the announcement marks a definitive rupture between Netanyahu and Lieberman, who had previously joined their parties in a formal alliance, and relation between these two men has become increasingly sour in the last year. And as a side note, Lieberman, who's kind of unusual in the world of international diplomacy because he does not actually live in Israel. Instead, he chose to live in settlements in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, which Palestinians have still claimed for future use. So this is, to me, a really, really good news. I mean, we're talking about a weakening or a watering down of Israel's government that they're trying to put together here, and potentially a weakening of Netanyahu's position. Interesting, too, that this gentleman who does live in the occupied area there is getting ready to withdraw and resign. So that's what's going on in Israel right now. Moving on, there is a large pilgrimage going on in Mexico right now. A pilgrimage of more than 15,000 indigenous people from Chiapas is marching in a peaceful action to raise the demand to the state government that they do not want to be ruled by narco politics. And this pilgrimage will arrive in Tuxtla Gutierrez, completing a more than 240-kilometer march in cold weather, rain and heat to denounce that the city, as well as various regions in the state, there is always already evident institutional breakdown, and that the situation in Chiapas is very similar as in state governments like Guerrero, which are all organized are all run by organized crime. So essentially what's going on right now, we got 15,000 people, indigenous people there in Mexico, marching against the government, against the narco involvement with the government there. And I got to say, you know, I fully support that. I love seeing people like this rising up peacefully all over the world. And, you know, especially if they're trying to get underneath the corrupt government that they've got down there. So that's good news, I suppose. Moving into the good news section of the news today. Also, we've had this story about Argentina and a whole bunch of scientists there stepping up against Monsanto. Last month, thousands of farmers joined together in protest of the GMO industry and their influence over the Indian government as well. So now we see another ginormous protest against Monsanto taking place in India. And these farmers gathered, had a number of different complaints, but the most common among them was Monsanto. Okay, also GMOs and the World Trade Organization and the policies which they believe were written by the biotech industry. Absolutely awesome stuff coming out of India now, more and more. I have some fantastic news coming out of Oregon when we get to that point too here in the national news, but I want to give you guys another update on some earth changes that are going on in the international front. There has been a large rise in the number of volcanic earthquakes recorded in Hakone, Japan, and the nearby Hakone volcano have began belching steaming gas, and the meteorologists say there is now possible risk of an eruption. There has not been an eruption there since the 12th century, ladies and gentlemen, but there were two minor earthquakes registering 2.4 and 2.0 recorded at the Hakone volcano, which is located in the Kanagawa province and is about 80 kilometers southwest of the capital of Tokyo. And meanwhile, there were a total of 98 volcanic earthquakes recorded at the popular hot springs resort on Hakone. And this is just up till yesterday. And during the whole of Monday, there were 34 just yesterday volcanic earthquakes logged. So again, it hasn't erupted since the 12th century, but they are asking people to avoid that resort area there in Japan. Again, just more indication that things are bubbling below the surface, so to speak. Okay, let's move into the national news right now. We are moving right along. We do have a lot of news to cover, so you guys will have to forgive me for moving quickly. Moving into the national news here in the United States, the Pentagon has a message for all of us people out here who are concerned about this Jade Helm situation. And the message in a word is chill. Right. So defense officials Monday dismissed as wild speculation an internet-fueled claim that a massive summertime exercise called Jade Helm for Special Operations Commandos is in fact a covert operation by President Barack Obama to take over Texas. So anyway, the Pentagon coming out saying that's not really what's going on here. And that claim actually though, that some covert unsavory activity was going on here, was given a little bit of legitimacy again by Texas Governor Greg Abbott last week when he ordered the Texas State Guard to monitor these exercises. But anyway, Army Colonel Steve Warren, who is a Pentagon spokesman, on Monday said that the Operation Jade Helm poses no threat to any Americans' civil liberties. And Operation Jade Helm is being conducted by Americans, by specifically American Special Forces personnel. Don't you guys just have a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart right now for the Pentagon? They all have your best interests at heart, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just keep that in mind. Jade Helm, going to be one of the biggest peacetime military exercises in 6 decades. It is beginning on the 15th of July. It will last 2 months. Thousands of Army Rangers, Green Berets, and Navy SEALs and other special operation forces will simulate war missions in mainly remote areas of Arizona, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, New Mexico, Texas, and Utah. It's also going to be taking place on tracts of both public and private land in these 7 states. But the Texas State Guard said Monday it is prepared to follow Governor Abbott's orders and asked by this news organization whether it felt compelled to mobilize troops in order to monitor the exercises. Lieutenant Colonel Joan McGregor, who is the unit's public affairs officer, said the Texas State Guard stands ready to support the governor of Texas when called upon to serve. Leaders of the Texas State Guard are in the process of examining the best way to meet the governor's intent, according to McGregor. She also said they are working with U.S. Special Operations Command in order to alleviate any possible public concerns. And at the Pentagon, Warren also said this is training that we have coordinated in great deal with both state and local officials of the various states that we will be conducting it in. So all of these things that they are saying to me right now just pretty much freak me out, guys, because they're basically saying, all of the things that we've been saying, but they're trying to put a positive spin on it. Why do we have, honestly, Army Rangers, Green Berets, and Navy SEALs, and other special operations forces simulating war missions in America? It makes no sense. These are guys who've been in the thick of it all around the world in some of the most hairy spots on the planet. They don't need training, guys. These are not the guys that need training. These aren't people. The only thing that's going on with this is they're being acclimated to operate on U.S. soil, because that's the only thing that they could possibly gain from this. And so the fact that the Pentagon coming out and saying, yes, that is in fact exactly what we're doing, but everything's going to be fine. Usually when the Pentagon comes out says everything's going to be fine, I disagree. You know, that's when I start thinking, okay, we got a problem here. And I definitely agree with Mr. Abbott sending these Texas State Guards. Just so you guys know, too, the Texas State Guard was established back in 1871. It has nearly 2,000 members. But unlike the Texas National Guard, it cannot operate outside of Texas and cannot be pressed into national service by the president. So that is pretty cool, in my opinion, that Texas still has an actual state militia that responds directly to the governor. I think they might. I don't think we have one here in Missouri. Texas Senator Ted Cruz also came out and he said that Texans were actually pretty correct in worrying about this particular event. He says, you know, I understand the concern that's been raised by a lot of citizens about Jade Helm. This is him speaking to Bloomberg on Saturday. He says it's a question that he is getting a lot, and he thinks it is part of the reason that we have seen for 6 years. He says part of the reason that people are so concerned about this is that we have seen for 6 years the federal government disrespecting the liberty of the citizens, and that produces fear. And when you see a federal government that is attacking our free speech rights, our religious liberty groups, and our Second Amendment rights, that produces a distrust in the government. And I find it hard to believe that I'm agreeing with Ted Cruz here. Just as a side note, remember Ted Cruz's wife worked for Goldman Sachs. She is not quit the company, ladies and gentlemen. She's just taken an extended leave of absence because she's trying to backpedal away from that situation as far as you can. But again, you don't become the regional, you know, she was head of the Southwest region for Goldman Sachs. She's you know, like fifth in the company, guys. It's not just some random person that works at a bank. Anyway, Ted Cruz coming out talking about basically saying he understands why people are upset. Even Chuck Norris has now come out. And I got to say, when Chuck Norris comes out against Jade Helm, that's the time when we all need to stand up. He actually was quoted yesterday saying, to those who merely think that we should check our brains at the door of the White House and trust what the government does, I would reiterate to you the words of one of our government's primary founders, Benjamin Franklin, who said, distrust and caution are the parents of security. I absolutely love it. Yes, me too. Tav out there saying he loves Chuck Norris. I also love Chuck Norris. So I'm good with this. But again, a lot of questions still being raised about this Jade Helm thing. I have no idea really what's going to happen. We have been successful in shutting down a couple of portions in Texas and Arizona. I hope that the more attention that's being drawn to this, the quicker it goes away. You know, we do have to consider, and I can't really believe I'm going to say this, we do have to consider the other side of the coin on this one. And by other side of the coin, I'm referring to the storyline that some of you guys may be following that's put out by people like Benjamin Fulford and David Wilcox. I have a lot of trouble trusting David Wilcox, mostly because of the pirate shirts. I've got one of those rules. I don't trust guys wearing tunics, and I don't trust people wearing pirate shirts. But at the same time, these guys have been talking a lot about the downfall of the cabal. And by the cabal, we mean the global elite, the banking interests, and all these idiot eugenics nuts that are running the planet right now. And one of the things that they've been talking about for like the last year is that the cabal is going away, that these potential drills that we're getting ready to see could be so I love Kev. I love you, Kev. Hold on, I'll come back to that in a second. That we could potentially be seeing the groundwork being set up for a mass arrest, you know, a clearing of the slate, so to speak. And yes, and Benjamin Fulford will allegedly unleash the ninjas, as Kevin is aptly pointing out in the chat room. This is getting into the dragon banking families and all of this other stuff. But, you know, where there is smoke, there is often a lot of fire. We've had Karen Udis on. We do know, not just from Karen, but from a lot of other sources, there are historical bonds out there. The Green Hilton Accord did actually, you know, come into existence. There are good people out there. There are white hats out there. Certainly there are people out there who probably, took an oath to the Constitution and actually read the Constitution, understand what that means. And I hope a lot of them are still in the military right now. So really, I think maybe like a 0.1% of me is hoping that this whole Jade Helm thing might be some sort of groundwork for intimidation of the cabal or potentially just coming in and sweeping them out. Because again, given the people who are operating with this Jade Helm thing, these are not people that need training. They either need to be acclimated to operate on American soil, you know, zip ties and black bags, and that's what these guys do, or they're going to be doing that against bankers, and I'm hoping that that's the case. I don't think that's the case because, again, dragon families and ninjas and ancient alien warriors and things like that, it's hard to go down that road. But, again, hope blooms eternal, does it not, ladies and gentlemen? Because, again, we really, if there's going to be some sort of massive, you know, pushback against these guys, it's going to take the military to do it. It's going to take people who understand liberty, who understand that your rights were codified by the documents, and those people who want to get us back to a republic would be absolutely great. Okay. Also, some bad news coming out of some national courts here in the United States. Apparently now, according to a court in Atlanta, investigators do not need a search warrant to obtain cell phone tower location records in criminal prosecutions. And a federal appeals court ruled yesterday in a very closely watched case involving the rules for this changing technology. So the Atlanta-based 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals did overturn a 3-judge panel of the same court, concluded that authorities properly got 67 days worth of records from a Metro PCS for a Miami robbery suspect, Mr. Davis here, using court order with a lower burden of proof. Anyway, what they're basically saying is that there's nothing stopping the law enforcement agencies from going out and getting your metadata from the cell phone towers. And what's really startling to me is what they say here. The judges actually, in their writing their ruling, said that, you know what, you guys know how phones work. That's literally what they say. You guys know how phones work. If you have a cell phone, you know that that information is going to the tower. That's not a secret anymore. So you know that information is susceptible. And if you're part of a prosecution, or a part of a trial, we're going to use that information. So that's essentially what they decided yesterday. There's another big-time federal judge decision that we should talk about as well, but we got to wait until after this 3-minute break. I love you guys out there in the chat room. Nano Girl hanging out in the chat room. Such an excellent show yesterday on KBS. Love it, love it, love it. We got to go this 3-minute break, guys. Lots more news when we come back. And James Perloff will join us in about a half an hour. Keep it right here, guys. We'll see you in a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp USA HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Exposing faux capitalism with Jason Earp.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all who are hanging out in the chat room right now, 22 in the chat. You guys can join them at truthfrequencyradio.com. So much great discussion going on in there. Plus, you've got Kev Baker and the one and only Nano Girl in the chat room right now. I don't know any other network gives you an opportunity to get this close to other fantastic contributors and other fantastic hosts. Not only that, but you can talk to all kinds of listeners from around the world. It is absolutely the thing that I believe sets True Frequency apart is chat room that Chris and Cherie have built into the show here. Just absolutely love it. Appreciate all of you guys hanging out with me in the morning. Kind of makes me feel like we have a little family going on here, and it's just awesome. I think the whole goal with True Frequency ought to just make the whole thing one big long show. That's what I think. I think we'll get there eventually, and that nobody will ever have a reason to turn this network off, and that's the goal here. I'm sure that's the goal at KBS, as well as a bunch of the other fine hosts here on the network. Okay, let's get back into the news. We just talked about that story, basically saying that you guys know how your phones work, so you know that they're taking all your data, which means you no longer have any right to privacy, according to the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. So there you go. Good times. Happy to be part of this whole team. Also, we had a story last year about a California man. Became kind of a media sensation after he discovered a government GPS tracker on his car. Do you guys remember that story? It took place in California again. He went in for an oil change. This was back in like October of 2010. So you guys would have to have been following this. Anyway, another big court decision yesterday decided that totally fine if the FBI believes that you're some sort of threat, they can put a tracking vehicle on your or a tracking device on your car, and there's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't violate your Fourth Amendment rights, and it doesn't violate your ability to go out and demonstrate or do anything like that. So there you go, another loophole been closed on all of us. Also, here in the United States, got to give you guys a warning. We had this story yesterday of ISIS claiming the claiming responsibility for that attack in Garland, Texas, which was stupid because if you're that much of a failure, I don't know why you would want to claim responsibility for it. But the terrorist group ISIS has now come out with a new message. They're saying that they have 71 fighters, which is oddly specific number, operating in 15 different states, and 23 of those 71 fighters have, I guess, already signed up for missions on a website. These missions are going to be similar to the failed ones in Garland, I imagine. But this is what they say in this message, or this is part of it. He says, the attack by the Islamic State in America is only the beginning of our efforts to establish a Wiliyah, in the heart of our enemy. I don't know what that means. But the aim, our aim, they say their aim was Pamela Geller. Pamela Geller is the lady who writes an anti-Islamic blog, and she was also the person who put together this art show, this Muhammad art show that took place there in Garland. So in this particular letter, they're speaking specifically about Pamela Geller, and they wanted to show her that they don't care what land she lives in or hides in or what sky she is shielded under. They say they will send all of our lions to achieve her slaughter. So anyway, that's what's going on. More threats from ISIS again. 71 trained soldiers in 15 different states, ready at our word to attack any target we desire. So are you guys scared? I'm not. They said in 15 states, they will name 5 of them: Virginia, Maryland, Illinois, California, and Michigan. So they go on to say a whole bunch of stuff about Allah and blah, blah, blah. But is it real? Is it Memorex? I don't know. I'm not really that concerned about it, given all of the goofy correlations between the FBI and that incident that took place in Garland. I would imagine that if they're putting out information about all these cities that we probably already have all these guys well under wraps. But given the fact that we're in probably elbow deep into false flag territory right now, it does, you know, probably remains something that we should talk about. So just keeping you guys in the loop on that. Moving over into United States stuff regarding the weather and regarding, you know, earth changes, things like that. Apparently, the water shortage in California is still going on, obviously, because the drought's still continuing. The targeted goal that Jerry Brown mentioned last month of 25% apparently has not been achieved. They have actually only been able to save about 8.6%, according to the State Water Resources Control Board, just up until the 1st of April. So who knows where we're going to be at with that, but people in California not really following suit on the demand to cut down on water use. We had that large story yesterday about Lake Mead potentially drying up, which is one of the water sources that provides Los Angeles. So again, bad news there. Let's get into some okay, if not good news here. For the first time in five decades, I love this story, the U.S. is going to allow ferry service between Florida and Cuba. At least four different companies said they were notified yesterday of approvals by the U.S. Treasury and Commerce Departments. This is the first time since the Washington imposed a trade embargo on Cuba more than 50 years ago. So again, a Treasury spokeswoman confirmed approval of ferry licenses, but not didn't say exactly how many were approved. Right now, there are four different companies that are hoping that they're going to be part of this program. Cuba also has to approve these operations, but I think this is cool. I would love to hop a ferry down to Cuba. They're also saying that they're going to be able to offer these ferry trips for obviously a lot less money than chartered flights, and they're also going to be able to allow a lot more baggage going down there for free. So a lot of Cuban Americans are going to be looking at these ferries to haul down hefty supplies for family homes and new private businesses that they're going to be taking off in Cuba. But I just think that is super awesome. I'm loving this idea of going down to Cuba, checking it out. I have this feeling in my heart that it's probably one of the most beautiful countries in the world, even despite 50 years of being messed with by the United States. Okay, moving on to here in Oregon. This is probably the best news of the day. Oregon is not messing around here, guys, not at all. On May 19th, coming up this next couple of weeks, a vote is expected on this measure. The measure is 2-89, and this measure means that the state would ban all GMOs, and even more than that, they would give 90 days for the destruction of Roundup Ready beets statewide. So you can imagine just how fiery the back and forth was on this during the recent town meeting, but it does show, again, Oregon not playing around with food issues anymore. So this passage from the bill says that it also contains sections establishing rights for natural communities such as plants and soil, and these provisions would appear to limit the use of patented seeds or other crops by eliminating the ability to enforce seed patent rights within the county, and language stating that all corporations and government agencies would be banned from using any genetically modified organisms in the county. And this is the proverbial death nail in the heart for Monsanto and their cronies, and obviously not sure whether or not this is going to pass, but obviously a wonderful direction. And if you're in Oregon, man, I would fully support this measure 289. Unbelievable. I mean, that they would actually go to the extent of destroying crops that are already in the ground. Really, really substantial news there. Also, Illinois in the news, and I really like this. A lot of Illinois youths who are considered to be at risk could be looking at a new career, get this, in the medical marijuana industry due to a generous donation to the city of Bloomington by Curative Health Incorporated, which is a medical marijuana corporation based out of New York. And in case you're wondering what an at-risk youth is, an at-risk student, sometimes referred to as at-risk youth, are adolescents who are less likely to achieve transition successfully into adulthood or achieve economic self-sufficiency. So the company gave a huge donation to the city council with the intent to support a local label program for young adults. Pardon me here one second, guys. Sorry, I had to wet my whistle there for a second. And granted, they were also likely greasing the hands who could give them a permit to operate a dispensary in Illinois, but nonetheless, it does offer a leg up to at-risk teens. I personally would love to go and work for an organization like this. I think that this is such a genius thing. Give these kids skills in a $6 billion industry that's just taking off here in our country. Give these guys, oh man, I just love it. So anyway, The company did, again, give the donation to the city council, and the donation was likely suggested by the mayor as it could obviously benefit this Curative Health Incorporated. And the Pentagraph actually reported that the company already runs a medical marijuana dispensary in Chicago and is looking to expand into Mayor Renner's district. And Mayor Renner is the donation, the person who received this big donation. But anyway, the city chief, the city attorney, believes it would be difficult for the company to obtain a license since the dispensary permits have already been issued to other businesses, and guidelines issued by the state of Illinois actually suggest that those looking for approval for dispensary applications, they should develop relationships with their local government offices. So while the Curative organization may have had their own motives for developing a relationship with Mayor Renner's idea of providing summer jobs for at-risk youth, the cash from the company came through nonetheless as a means to support the program that often gets overlooked in the city and county budget. So I think this is fantastic news coming out of the state of Illinois, and I hope that other states follow suit with that, giving these kids a leg up in a major, major industry that's just getting ready to take off here in the United States. Thank God. Thank God. Okay, getting into the economic news here right now. The Dow Jones currently down 142 points, just below 1%. So we're at 17,928. The S&P up just a little bit today, which is unusual, but 2,091 for the S&P. The dollar index is continuing to go down. We are at $94.89 there. Let's check out what the euro. Euro is climbing. We were at 112 yesterday, and we are at 112.33 today. Bitcoin, pretty flat, $235.83. And let's check out the gold, down just a little bit today at $11.89. Silver also down just a touch today, $16.44. Crude oil coming up more than 2% already this morning in early trading. We are at $61.70. Truth coming through with the BDI down 5 points today at 575. And that is what is going on in the broader markets this morning. On an international economic front, let's see here. Overseas investors with links to the UK have been apparently withdrawing cash at an unprecedented rate during the last year amid fears that the result of Thursday's general election there in the UK could prompt domestic instability. And while we're on the subject of Thursday's general election, I have it on pretty good authority that the KBS crew is going to do a 37-hour straight marathon, keeping you guys up to date. I'm not sure if it's exactly that long, but that's, I think, what I picked up yesterday. Kev and the crew on the radio, 37 hours straight or something like that when this election goes down tomorrow. So definitely tune in. I guess we should be using the word selection, not election, because they really don't elect people to run for-profit corporations via public elections anymore. But anyway, that's what's going on tomorrow for the KBS crew. So if you guys are paying attention to that election, definitely want to tune in for him on that. Also, anyway, according to these latest figures from Cross Border Capital, more than $360 billion has been withdrawn over the last 15 months, with a lot of them large sums coming from Russian investors who are vanishing due to these international sanctions. And this rapid withdrawal of investment has triggered concern about the strength of the pound overseas. And Cross Border, an investment advisor group, suggested the drain on finances is unusual because the UK has previously been very attractive to investors. And the figures, however, do note a sustained sell-off that happened back in 2005 around those elections, but they do not exist on a similar scale to what we're seeing right now. Again, $360 billion being withdrawn over the last 15 months. Not really sure if it's related to the election or international sanctions, but I imagine all of those things have a play in that. Just on a world front right now too, you know, trying to figure out exactly what's going on and trying to put this into a little bit more perspective. Just consider a couple of these following facts here. Governments right now are completely unable to eliminate their deficits, right? Global government debt is increasing right now exponentially. 0% interest rates are actually allowing the government to borrow more to pay off old loans and fund their own deficit. So that in and of itself, ladies and gentlemen, is a self-inflicted Ponzi scheme that these governments are doing right now. Also, global growth is declining despite money printing and bailouts. And as we have pointed out on the program before, the latest and greatest fact is that a stunning 0% interest rates, as stunning as those 0% interest rates sound, the mathematically challenged fantasy land called Europe has just one-upped everyone by introducing negative interest rates. So as of this morning, more than 25% of all bonds issued by the European government has a guaranteed negative return for investors. Again, negative interest rates, ladies and gentlemen, they are by their very nature irrational. Why would you pay someone to borrow money from you? It doesn't make any sense, and it's so irrational at this point. I don't imagine that it's going to last much longer. So again, if you're not prepared for the global junk bond debt to burst, you need to start thinking about this, because this is exactly what's going to happen. Case in point here is this European bond thing. You know, despite the fact that it started off pretty well since early March when the ECB began its bond buying bonanza, things have not been going the way that Mario Draghi had hoped. So this inflation data inflicted moderately higher oil. European bond yields and peripheral bond spreads have now widened notably. And whether this is a sell the news style trading or if this is Greek serious disappointment contagion, it's pretty unclear. But what is clear is that if the ECB bond buying is not pressuring yields lower, then how can they hope to contain a real Grexit contagion? So what this actually is saying is that despite the fact that quantitative easing is going on in Europe, people are still putting their money into European bonds in a ginormous way, which is exactly what Mario Draghi was trying to prevent by establishing this whole quantitative easing thing right now. And European stocks did not respond well yesterday. They were down in specifically in Greece more than they have been in 3 months as of yesterday. So still a lot of economic turmoil going on right now. Here's a little report coming out of the United States. Apparently the IRS doled out more than $5 billion, that's billion with a B, in potentially bogus college aid payments in 2012, just under Obama's stimulus tax credit, according to a report that came out yesterday from the agency's inspector general. They also said the administration doesn't really have a good idea on how to root out some of these erroneous claims. So what the report actually says is that nearly 4 million students had questionable claims, totaling more than $5.6 billion. And we're just speaking about 2012 alone here, ladies and gentlemen. And at least half of these students never provided tuition statements showing what they paid, while others attended schools that did not qualify them for tax credit in the first place. And even other students claimed the credit for more than 4 years, which should have automatically earned a rejection, according to this investigation. So again, IRS doling out more than $5.6 billion to fraudulent students, and they have no idea what they're going to do about that right now. Happy to be part of this whole team. Also, in the March numbers are coming out in terms of gold right now, and there's kind of been a weird thing going on at the Federal Reserve here. In terms of this March data, it can now be officially confirmed that the gold redemptions from the world's allegedly largest gold vault, talking about the Fed's vault here, made another large transaction in the month of March. Another 10 tons of gold was put on a ship or a plane in March and sent off in an unknown direction. So as a result, the total earmarked gold at the New York Fed is now down to 5,979.2 tons, a level not seen in the current century. But what's most interesting about this is that although we noted this last month, the total expected gold redemptions by Germany and the Netherlands amounted to 207 tons. So in March, the redemption in March, this 10 tons, means that either Germany is continuing to pull out its gold, some 10 tons at a time, or potentially some other central bank has joined into the parade of gold repatriators. So that's what's going on here. We're still bleeding gold out of the Fed and other nations around the world soaking it up. And I do kind of like that because, again, I think we're moving to an SDR basket that's going to include gold. And I think we're going to have to move to an asset-backed some sort of asset-backed currency around the planet, because there's just so much debt in this fake money right now that we'll never get back out of it. They're going to have to do some kind of global reset. It's just going to have to happen. I don't know when it's going to be or how bad it's going to be, but it's going to be crazy, I believe. Here's something else that's kind of crazy as we're moving over into the tech stuff. I don't like this idea at all, but Polish banks have introduced mobile ATMs. That's right. They have bolted into these really pretty slick looking miniature BMWs ATMs. So you can call an ATM to you as opposed to trying to go out and track down an ATM. But I can just already tell the people out here paying attention to this, the criminal minds must just be going absolutely bonkers with this one. Because now you could not only steal a BMW, but it comes with a whole load of cash in it as well. I don't think this is a very good idea, but it's Idea Bank there in Poland sending out mobile ATMs that you can summon via app, kind of moving us from the economic field into the science and tech stuff. Ooh, we're running out of time here. Just another quick note as well. In Hong Kong, there's another organization right now that is developing artificial intelligence for computer-assisted trading. Obviously, this computer-assisted trading, not really anything new, but this new realm of, AI, the new realm of AI trading is kind of going to take us into a whole new field here, because these computers essentially are going to be creating their own trading models. They are able to go out and cultivate all kinds of information off of the World Wide Web, social media, things like that. And normally a person would have to actually kind of give them the model, and then the trades would be based off of the models. That's how high-speed trading is done now. The AI is going to take it to, like, high-speed trading on crack. We're going to go to a whole nother level. Okay, and here's the last little thing I'll talk about in the economic news, and I'm only referring to this as an economic story because so much money was actually involved. But we are going to talk real quick. Floyd Mayweather did say he is willing to fight Manny Pacquiao in a rematch in 2016. There's a lot of backstory that's going on regarding this fight. First of all, boring, unbelievably boring, this fight. And I know a lot of people gave Kev a hard time for taking the 40 minutes out of his busy life to actually spend it paying attention to something other than the news. And I did the same thing. I don't want to watch 4 hours of football, but you know, boxing's pretty cool as far as I'm concerned. And I was actually looking forward to this fight. I don't remember there actually being a fight. It seemed like a couple of dudes just dancing around in a ring. But anyway, Pacquiao did not report that he had a shoulder injury, so there's going to be a huge lawsuit from the Gambling Association in Las Vegas, because a lot of people lost a lot of money on this fight, and because he didn't report it, so he's basically going to get sued. Also, he's going to be out for 9 to 12 months as he's undergoing surgery right now, but interesting that Floyd Mayweather said that he is willing to fight another fight on this. I don't know if it'll actually come to fruition or not. All of the same conditions that kept the fight from happening for such a long time still exist today. But at the end of the day, money talks and the rest of it doesn't. And Mayweather, if there's one thing we know that dude is about, it is money. So I think if he has the ability to make some money. And you know, I'd like to see Pacquiao actually fight the guy healthy. I think that would be cool to see. Anyway, let's move on. A little science and tech news for you guys here right now. The LHC is back in business, ladies and gentlemen. The Large Hadron Collider apparently smashed its first particle just this morning. Particle accelerator ring heated up with some low-level energy collisions, according to CERN. They put this out in a statement. So about 9:30 Central European time this morning, for the first time since the Large Hadron Collider started up after 2 years of maintenance and repairs, the accelerator did deliver proton-to-proton collisions to the LCH experiments, ALICE, ATLAS, CMS, and LHCb at an energy of 450 giga electron volts, or 450 GeV per beam. So again, not full capacity right now. Oh, Kev's saying they're up to 600 GeV right now. So obviously they're still moving. Not concerned about this mysterious object, apparently, that just manifested itself in time and space in probably one of the most secure locations on the planet at this point. No big deal. We're just going to whiz some photons on by it and hope that it doesn't get angry, ladies and gentlemen. That's where we're at with all that right now, but just keeping you in the loop, the LHC back up and running. Also, if you guys are interested in this, the SpaceX continuation, their experiments are going on right now, and there's going to be an experiment today. If you go to redpillreports.com, get into the show section and scroll down to the science and tech stuff, you'll be able to find this article. There is a link to the NASA website where they're going to be doing this particular test. This test that they're running is a pad abort test, and they're running it on its Dragon V2 spacecraft. Again, it's going to be today, a little later this afternoon. It's the first real test on the actual pod. This is the part that actually will hold people as they go up into space, and this test is supposed to help pave the way for the first manned missions scheduled to exist in 2017. The test itself is pretty straightforward. It involves the craft's launch abort system, and in case of failure, this test ensures that the procedure to remove the crew from the spacecraft, the crew and the spacecraft from the combustible rocket fuel works as planned. And it's very similar to an ejection seat for a fighter pilot, but instead of injecting the pilot, the entire spacecraft is ejected away from the launch vehicle. And what also makes this one interesting is that the launch abort system is actually integrated into the walls of the spacecraft instead of consisting of a separate rocket tower on top. So again, they're going to be doing this test today. Basically, they're going to launch this thing and they're going to do an abort, make sure that they separate properly and that they can recover both the chute deployment section and the pod section. So if you're interested in that, definitely go check out the link. It's at redpillreports.com underneath the science and tech section. And I will probably be watching that myself this afternoon. Okay. just as a little touch of woo here for your afternoon, there was a story that came out yesterday that I thought was fairly interesting. I won't be able to play this clip, but you guys will be able to find it at, again, at the Red Pill Reports underneath the show section. Apparently, there was a gentleman who was a grad student working with NASA on a NASA student balloon experiment, and he had these balloons way out in the atmosphere, and they were using a spectrometer to record any type of sound or anything like that. Well, they got a sound, ladies and gentlemen, and it really sounds like something directly out of the X-Files. So it's actually startled NASA to the point that they're going to try and go and repeat this particular experiment, see if they can figure out where this noise came from. But if you had to imagine the noise, imagine like a crackly, whistly, super sci-fi-y scary sound. That's exactly what it was. And they, I'll send it here. I'll just put this link in the chat room. I don't know why I didn't do that a second ago. And then you guys can listen to it at home. See, so much of you, you guys are missing if you're not in the chat room. Check this out. Oh, wait a minute. That's not the right link. Give me 2 seconds here. Rark. Kill that. Copy this. But yeah, you guys have to listen to this. It's wild. I really didn't play it on the radio because it's mostly just squeaks and popples and whistles and things like that. But really interesting that they've heard this. Definitely for the first time that they've heard something like this out in outer space. We're not going to get to the health news yet. I will let you know that the bird flu thing here in the United States has reached epidemic portions. We are proportions. We are now at the most infected that we've ever been. This is the largest avian flu outbreak here in the United States, and they're actually suggesting that we probably won't be getting turkeys for Thanksgiving. That's how bad this is going to get. They're actually to cull ridiculous amounts of birds. Even the people who supply the eggs and things like that are having to cull the young birds. So most likely might be very difficult to get a Thanksgiving turkey this year. Just keeping you guys up to date on that. Lots more science and stuff. Lots more health stuff I didn't get a chance to get to. But we have to go to this 3-minute break. And we will have James Perloff on the program here in about 3 minutes. So keep it right here, guys. Really appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. 26 in the chat this morning. Absolutely epic. More than 1,000 on the live stream right now. Really appreciate you guys tuning in for the show today. We're going to be right back. Mr. James Perloff, keep it right here, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to OurUniversalJourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for hanging out through that 3-minute break. Someone's telling me we had a creepy noise going on over the commercial. I don't know what that was. I'm sorry about that. Who? Appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. 26 in the chat room right now. More than 1,000 on the live stream. Just cannot thank you guys enough for making us all feel so welcome here and for joining the family here at the True Frequency Radio. Really, really excited to be welcoming back to the program today the one and only James Perloff. I'm sure many of you guys know a lot about James. He's an author. He's a researcher. He's absolute one of the most astute historians that I've ever met. Does countless radio shows and interviews and things like that. And when you have a question about history, I'll tell you, talking to James Perloff will set you guys straight. And I got to be honest, James, first of all, let me welcome you to the program. Thank you for taking some time out to join us on a very important broadcast today, James.
Well, thank you, JD. It's great to be back.
Well, you're always welcome here, and we absolutely love your contributions both to this show and all of the others that you do out there. And obviously right now, you know, we're one day away from the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Lusitania. And, you know, many people out there who have done the research already understand that that was really a false flag event. And since we are basically elbow deep in false flag territory right now, it probably behooves us to look back at history, try and figure out who the players were and see if any of those same conditions exist today. But I got to be honest with you, James. One of those old adages keeps sticking in my head, this idea that those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it. I'm starting to wonder, though, if those of us who do study history are just doomed to watch those people who haven't studied history repeat it anyway. What do you think about that, James?
Well, if they don't study it, they would be doomed. But, you know, the continuity thing is very important. You know, there were truthers after Pearl Harbor who tried to let people know that indeed the president knew about the attack. He did not warn our military in Hawaii, who he then scapegoated. And one reason those truthers had a problem was they only focused on Pearl Harbor. They didn't know the broader context. People said, well, why would our own president do that? We elected him. Same thing with 9-1-1. If you only look at 9-1-1, people say, well, we elected Bush. You know, he's our choice. So why would the president of the United States do that? You need to have the context of who's running America, what they've done in the past, how it all fits the pattern, and who runs the media. And that's why you don't hear about it in the mainstream.
That's right. So let's set that stage, maybe taking us back in time a little bit, James. Maybe we should set the stage by talking about the conditions that were prevalent before, you know, in the months preceding this the Lusitania event. Do you want to start right there?
That's right. Let's talk about why this incident happened. The Lusitania was a British passenger ship, and May 7th, 1915, 100th anniversary is tomorrow. It was sunk in the South Irish Sea. It was on its way from New York to Liverpool, and there were over 700 survivors, but 1,200 died, and that included 128 Americans. The ship was hit by a single torpedo from a U-boat. And then there was a second massive explosion that just ripped the ship, and it went down. It weighed 32,000 tons, but it went down in just 18 minutes. And this became the pretext, ultimately, for our declaration of war. Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, the president, and his the cabal controlling him hope we'd get an immediate declaration of war, but the public mood wasn't ready for it. It took some time. But this was the main event that set off a series of difficult communications between the United States and Germany that ultimately resulted in the declaration of war.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, we're talking about a very large vessel that sank very, very quickly. And obviously that probably wouldn't have happened if it had just been a torpedo attack. Am I correct in that?
That's right. One of the great controversies surrounding the Lusitania is what caused that second explosion, which we'll get into. By the way, JG, just to set the context further, I should mention that for people who are not quite familiar, in 1915, when the Lusitania was sunk, World War I was in full swing, but America was not involved. Britain was. The Lusitania was a British ship. Britain had become an ally of Russia and France and Serbia in their war against the Central Powers, which constituted the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Germany, and the Ottoman Empire, essentially. So this war was in full swing, but something was needed to be done, a false flag, to get America embroiled in the war as well.
Okay. So then talk about how the sinking actually came about. You know, let's talk about what made the boat actually go to where it was supposed to, not supposed to be, as far as I know. You know, really, really kind of going through some of the detail of what actually went down in the weeks preceding and then in the actual incident, if you would.
Yes, exactly. What's very important to know why it was that the Germans sank this ship without warning or any merchant or commercial vessel. And to know that, you have to understand that when the war began, the British Royal Navy started a blockade of Germany, and they were not allowing any commercial ships to go in. They said even food was contraband. And the Germans couldn't do anything about it because their fleet was inferior to the Royal Navy. And the Royal Navy also laid mines in the North Sea. So the only ships that could actually get out of the German Navy during the course of the war were their U-boats. They were the only ships that could evade the blockade. Mm-hmm. Several hundred thousand Germans, including many children, died from starvation due to that blockade. And the Germans' retaliation of attempting to sink commercial vessels coming to Britain was indeed just that. It was retaliation for what the British had started. But when the Germans were initially taking out commercial vessels that were going into the British Isles, they observed what was known then as cruiser rules. These were rules under international law. They've been established at places like the Hague Convention. Mm-hmm. And they stated that if a military ship attacked a commercial ship, it had to give the commercial ship a chance to surrender and disembark its crew and passengers in lifeboats before sinking it. And the Germans were observing that. And the reason they stopped observing it was that Britain, the Admiralty under Winston Churchill, he was head of the Admiralty at this time, decided unilaterally to break the rules. And here's what Churchill did. He decided to arm merchantmen. I'm going to quote the best book. This is really the critical thinker's book on the Lusitania. It's called The Lusitania by Colin Simpson, uh-huh, British historian. Here's what he wrote. Quote, "From October 1914 onward, a steady stream of inflammatory orders were issued to the masters of British merchant ships. It was made an offense to obey a U-boat's orders to halt. Instead, masters must immediately engage the enemy, either with their armament if they possessed it or by ramming if they did not. Any master who surrendered his ship was to be prosecuted, and several were."
Wow.
Unquote, Colin Simpson. So now the question is, okay, why did Churchill choose to do this? And he himself explains it. He wrote a letter to Walter Runciman, who was president of the Board of Trade before the Lusitania was sunk. He said, quote, "It is most important to attract neutral shipping to our shores in the hope especially of embroiling the United States with Germany," unquote. And here's what he wrote in his post-war book, The World Crisis. He really lays it out, quote, "The maneuver which brings an ally into the field is as serviceable as that which wins a great battle. The first British countermove made on my responsibility was to arm British merchantmen to deter the U-boat from surface attack. As the U-boats were forced by the progressive arming of the British mercantile marine to rely increasingly on underwater attacks, they encountered a new set of dangers. The submerged U-boat, with its defective vision, ran the greatest risk of mistaking neutral for British vessels and thus of embroiling Germany with the other great powers," unquote. So you see his plan here, JD, his hope is that a U-boat commander, through his periscope, not being able to see well enough what the flag is, will mistake an American ship for British, sink the American ship, and then the banksters have their pretext for war.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans were had a dilemma here. They could no longer surface to warn a crew that they were about to torpedo. They were getting rammed and sunk, and this happened so many times that finally the German Navy instructed U-boats, you can't do it anymore. We can't just lose the war. We can't unilaterally observe international law. So they did start torpedoing underwater. They had no choice but to do this without warning. But I should point out that the I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. You take it there, buddy, but I've been talking for too long.
Oh, you're great, man. No, we're basically talking about this this idea that he antagonized into action the German fleet because he basically cut at their knees out from underneath them when they were trying to basically, you know, acquiesce to international law, saving people's lives. One of my questions is how many other ships did the U-boats sink, you know, back when they were actually observing the law, letting people get into their boats, the lifeboats and things like that, James?
Well, they sank before the revocation of the this policy. They sank 25 British merchant ships, and on 20 of those, there were no casualties at all. And you can actually go on YouTube, and you can actually see film footage of them allowing merchant ships to have their crews disembark into lifeboats. But where I wanted to go next with this was, this is what I meant to make a segue, and I forgot what I was going to go to, but Churchill, seeing that the U-boat captains were not sinking American ships by mistake, he had to go to Plan B. Plan B was have them sink a British ship with Americans on board. That was the next best thing. And so he had Joseph Kenworthy of the political section of British Naval Intelligence make up a report for him on what the impact would be politically if the Germans sank a British ship with Americans on board, and that's what they got with the Lusitania.
Wow. You know, what startles me about this is that he actively militarized shipping vessels. You know what I mean? Like, these are when he basically gave the crew the permission or the order to shoot back at German U-boats or to try and ram them. That, to me, is a pretty significant development, James. Is that the first time we've seen the militarization of, you know, shipping or, I don't know what you would want to call that, but non-military vehicles being used for military purposes?
Well, I haven't studied that, but I would say that probably was so because it was generally the policy that mercantile ships were distinct from warships.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I know, that would be the case. We should talk a little about the foreknowledge that this ship, the Lusitania, would be sunk.
Absolutely, we should.
There are very significant quotes that reveal that. Now, during World War I, our ambassador to Britain was Walter Hines Page. He was militantly pro-British. And this is interesting. He was actually, while ambassador, he was on the private payroll of Cleveland Dodge of National City Bank, who was a big munitions dealer. Dodge was paying him $25,000 a year, which, you know, that'd be a huge sum of money today, well over half a million.
Right.
The alleged reason was so he could live in what was called proper ambassadorial style. But 5 days before the Lusitania was sunk, this is May the 2nd, 1915, Walter Hines Page wrote a letter to his son. And here's what he said, quote, "If a British liner full of American passengers be blown up, what will Uncle Sam do? That's what's going to happen," unquote. Now, this is two sentences, but it's full of meaning. He says it is going to happen. There will be a British liner full of American passengers. And notice, JD, he doesn't say it'll be sunk. He says it'll be blown up, which is exactly what happened. I should mention when the Germans fired this single torpedo into the Lusitania, mm-hmm. they were as shocked as anybody. They had sunk two steamers the previous day. One of them took an hour. If these were pretty small ships, one of them took an hour and a half to sink after being struck by two torpedoes. And you might recall the Titanic, when it had a significant damage, it was over 2 hours before it went down. The Germans were thinking they're going to put one torpedo into this ship, and we'll talk about why they targeted the Lusitania in a moment. But they put one torpedo into her, And their anticipation would have been, we'll sink this ship, which is ferrying munitions. This is the reason, okay.
Right.
It's ferrying munitions. But they figured, okay, we'll put one torpedo in it. There'll be plenty of time for this great 32,000-ton ship. It'll be a couple hours before it sinks. The passengers will be able to disembark. The rescue craft will arrive. But we'll take care of our mission. But the other quote, which is very significant, comes from Edward Mandel House. Now, many of your listeners will know that Edward Mandel House was Woodrow Wilson's controller. Wilson had been put into the presidency by the banksters. There's a really interesting backdrop to that. He'd gone to Princeton, and one of his classmates at Princeton was same graduating class was Cleveland Dodge, National City Bank, as well as Cyrus McCormick, who founded McCormick Harvester. And when he returned as a professor, Wilson, these guys were now on the board of trustees. They made him president, and then he published a book called The History of the American People, which was published by Harper, which was owned by the Morgan interest. And he became president. You know, he'd never been a senator or a congressman. He had no political experience, so they made him the governor of New Jersey for 1 year. And that was his total sum of experience, but that's the kind of trick that comes when you control the mass media, which in those days was newspapers. The Morgan Rockefeller interests were controlling the newspapers, and they're able to transform this guy from nowhere into the president of the United States. To become president, he had to pledge to support income tax and a central bank, i.e. the Federal Reserve. And guess what? His first year in office, 1913, income tax is passed, a Federal Reserve is passed. So this guy is put there by the banksters. They want world government. They want America in this war, and he does everything he can to get us into it. But his controller from Wall Street was Edward Mandel House, who's a banker who lived right in the White House. He was called the unseen guardian angel of the Federal Reserve Act by his official biographer, Charles Seymour, Skull and Bones. But on the day the Lusitania sank, Edward Mandel House was, of course, in Britain. And on that morning of the 7th, he met with Edward Grey, the British foreign minister, and I'm going to quote from the intimate papers of Colonel House, edited by Charles Seymour. House wrote this, quote, "We spoke of the probability of an ocean liner being sunk, and I told him if this were done, a flame of indignation would sweep America, which would in itself probably carry us into the war," unquote. Now, later that day, House and Edward Grey, the British foreign minister, went to Buckingham Palace, and they met with King George V. Here's what House writes now. He says, quote, "We fell to talking, strangely enough, of the probability of Germany sinking a transatlantic liner." He, meaning the king, said, "Suppose they should sink the Lusitania with American passengers on board," unquote. So here you've got the king asking, what will America do if the Germans sink the Lusitania? And this is about a couple of hours before the Lusitania was actually sunk.
Right? Wow. I mean, talk about foreknowledge. What else do we have in the way of foreknowledge, James?
Well, those are the best quotes I can give you. But other foreknowledge is expressed by the inaction of the British Admiralty to protect the Lusitania. Churchill had already met with his junior officers in the map room of the Admiralty, where they had a great grid showing all ships, both hostile and neutral. I should mention that they had cracked Germany's naval code, so every time a U-boat would surface, they would intercept the message and translate it. Mm-hmm. So they knew, they couldn't pinpoint precisely that I know of where a U-boat was, but they could pick up the radio signals and know what its orders were. And they knew, of course, that the U-20, which sank the Lusitania, was in the South Irish Sea. It sunk two steamers the previous day. Well, you know, normal protocol in a case like this would be to send destroyers to escort the Lusitania. The Lusitania had been escorted by destroyers previously when a submarine threat existed. And there were four destroyers sitting idle in the nearby port of Milford Haven. They were not sent out to protect the Lusitania, nor were they sent to hunt this sub, which was sinking vessels at will in the Irish Sea, which makes absolutely no sense and was completely contrary to the protocols that they had previously followed. Now, there was a ship that was supposed to meet the Lusitania. It was a cruiser called the Juno. But the Juno was recalled to port. It was recalled to the port of Queenstown on the southern coast of Ireland on the pretext that it couldn't risk being sunk by that submarine. Yet no order like this was sent to the Lusitania. Now, when the Lusitania arrived, it was under the command of Captain William Turner. He'd taken over because the previous ship's master, David Dow, said he told Cunard, who owned the Lusitania, that he could no longer tolerate carrying passengers with munitions. When he got to the South Irish Sea, no Royal Navy's waiting for him. And he'd received a dispatch. It was a general dispatch that went out to all commercial ships, indicating that there was a submarine threat in the South Irish Sea. So he knew about that, Captain Turner. Uh-huh. Now, in the Admiralty's records of wireless communications, there's a record that several messages were sent back and forth to the Lusitania. But the transcripts of all those messages have strangely gone missing from the Admiralty's files to this very day. So nobody knows what was sent, but it is reasonable to presume that Captain Turner asked, "Where's my escort?" I should mention that the Admiralty could have easily protected the Lusitania by rerouting her around the north of Ireland. She was, her assigned path was through the South Irish Sea, where this U-boat was operating, but the Admiralty knew there was no U-boats to the north of Ireland. They could have simply rerouted the ship, but Captain Turner had no authority to do that on his own. They also obviously could have sent these destroyers to escort her, but that was not done either. We don't know what was transmissions occurred, what communications took place, but we do know the Lusitania was sent straight into the path of the U-boat.
And that's just nuts. So, and then you just mentioned the fact that Captain Turner himself had had some concern about ferrying around ammunition. Did I hear you correct when you said that?
The previous commander had quit because here's what was happening. The previous commander was Captain Dow. Okay. Now here's what's happening. Every month the Lusitania made a voyage back and forth between England and America. And on its westbound voyage to America, Cunard, which owned Lusitania, was allowed to take any commercial goods it wanted as part of its, you know, making profits. I should mention that the Lusitania was built with assistance of the British government, and when it was operating pre-war, it was operating with subsidies from the British government, and this was done on the condition that if war broke out, the Lusitania would then become an auxiliary cruiser of the Royal Navy and fall under its orders. So at this point, it had been refitted for armament. It had been armor plated, and it had, according to some witnesses, it had cannon on its lowest decks where passengers were not allowed. Now there's dispute about this because people have testified that it did not. Some say it did, but it definitely was refitted as an auxiliary cruiser and was named in Jane's Fighting Ships as an auxiliary cruiser.
Wow.
And it would bring back these munitions. Now, let's talk about the munitions that were on board the Lusitania on its final voyage.
Yes.
This was known to the Germans because there were a lot of German Americans who worked the docks in New York, and they could see what was going on board, and they would report this to the German embassy. And on its final voyage, we know it had 173 tons of rifle cartridges. It had over 50 tons of shrapnel shells. It had 46 tons of aluminum powder. Now, this aluminum powder was used by the British at their Woolwich arsenal in the making of explosive shells and so forth. And it also had an unknown quantity of gun cotton. Gun cotton was another explosive they used in their sea mines and in their large caliber shells. We don't know how much was on board because they didn't list it. We know that before the Lusitania sailed, the DuPont munitions factory sent 600 tons of gun cotton to the Cunard Wharf, but some of that was loaded on other ships. But the thing about it is that the British would disguise their manifest. It was illegal to do this. You know, it was illegal to put American passengers on board a ship or a train carrying explosives. That was against the laws of our country. So to get around this, the British would disguise their manifest and call the munitions something else. Hmm. Now, on the final voyage, the manifest of the Lusitania lists 15 tons of butter and cheese. Now, we know that this wasn't butter and cheese because it was sent in unrefrigerated compartments. The Lusitania did have a refrigerated area, but there was meat in that. Mm-hmm. The so-called butter and cheese was put elsewhere. Also, the destination listed for butter and cheese was the weapons testing establishment of the Royal Navy. And also, nobody ever filed an insurance. an insurance claim on the missing butter and cheese. So this is one of the items on that manifest that was probably gun cotton.
Just, I wanted to reiterate that. Now you say the owners of the butter and the cheese were who exactly?
Well, it was destined for the weapons testing establishment of the Royal Navy.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, there were also furs listed, 323 bales of furs listed as part of the cargo, and these were destined for a British firm called B.F. Babcock, which never imported furs. It did, however, import cotton for the use of making gun cotton, the explosive, and nobody ever filed an insurance claim on the furs either. So I should mention that the collector of customs in New York was Dudley Field Malone, an interesting guy. He was in a political appointment of Woodrow Wilson, and he knew what was going on. He told Wilson that almost everything on board the Lusitania was contraband, but he rubber-stamped these manifests. He knew full well what was going on. By the way, here's an interesting bit of trivia. During World War II, the subsequent war, the most, I would say, the foulest propaganda movie made, the most pro-communist movie ever made, was called Mission to Moscow. It portrayed the Soviet Union as a paradise. And in that movie, the man who portrayed Winston Churchill, of course, in a most favorable light, was Dudley Field Malone. Now, this guy was not an actor. He was an attorney. I've got to guess that he turned up at the strangest places. But I have to say he was probably a Freemason. The movie was being made about our ambassador to the Soviet Union, who was a ranking Freemason, as was President Franklin D. Roosevelt, 33-degree Freemason, who, I should mention that Hollywood made that movie under pressure from the White House.
Is somebody knocking on your door, James?
Give me 1 second. It's not my door, it's somebody else. Hold on 1 second.
We're gonna get ready to go to this break, so I'm just gonna mute you out for just one quick second.
Are you hearing that knocking?
This is the beauty of live radio, ladies and gentlemen. All time, all
sorry
time.
About that. My wife is banging something.
Let's say, you know, we got to hang pictures. It happens, you know. Sometimes you got to hang a picture. We're getting ready to go to this quick 3-minute break, James. When I come back, I want to ask you a little bit more about the banking connection to these munitions and any more information that you might be able to provide about this Dudley Malone character, because that really intrigues me, the fact that he ended up in a movie basically glorifying Mr. Churchill, which is not really surprising given the context of everything that we're talking about right now. So we're going to go to the 3-minute break, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate you all hanging out with us right now. We are one day away from the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Lusitania. Obvious at this point to most of us that it is a false flag event, and since we are knee-deep in false flag territory, probably very important that we pay attention to it. So when we come back, we'll talk more about the sinking and then the aftermath of the sinking and kind of where we are today. Also talk a little bit about some of the correlations between the people who were running the agenda then and who are probably still running the agenda right now. So keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HempUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy 3 or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Ministries with Kenneth Emanuel. Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all who are hanging out in the chat room with us this morning. Really appreciate you guys joining the family here at TFR and hanging out with us at the Red Pill Reports. We are very fortunate to be talking to the one and only James Perloff today, probably my very favorite contributor to the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. And we're excited because we're talking about false flag attacks, ladies and gentlemen. And specifically, we're talking about the sinking of Lusitania, which will hit its 100-year anniversary as of tomorrow. And there are a lot of significant correlations to be made between how we knew that that event was going to happen, how we kind of nurtured it into existence in order to facilitate our in getting involved with the war, which is a fairly similar story to a lot of other stories that we could probably tell looking back through history and looking up through probably what's going to happen here going forward into the future. So important that we take some time out not only to respect the memory of the people who were absolutely devastated by the sinking of the Lusitania, but also so that we can try and think our way through some of the correlations and try and figure out how to prevent similar activities like this going forward into the future. And so, James, before the break, we were sort of speaking about Dudley Field Malone and the fact that there was a lot of foreknowledge about this incident. And I'm wondering if you wanted to just really quickly reiterate the connection between the banking interests and these people who are running the show and this munitions trade, if you would not mind. I just want to make sure we get that planted in the minds of the listeners today, sir.
Well, I mentioned Woodrow Wilson and his banking connection and the pledge he made to support the Federal Reserve and income tax, which came about in his first year of office. I should mention that he made that pledge specifically to the banker Bernard Baruch. And if we're talking about munitions profits, he then appointed Baruch during the war as head of the War Industries Board. Hmm. Baruch is said to have made at least $100 million personally off the war. He started a copper conglomerate in which raised the price of copper astronomically before the war began. But after the war, there was a congressional committee called the Graham Committee that conducted a 3-year study and issued a 21-volume report on war munitions fraud. And it found that the banksters here in America and the munitions manufacturers had defrauded the American people out of $6 billion worth of armaments and munitions that were either not manufactured or never delivered, or the money was diverted to their own personal use. And I should mention that the Graham Committee handed down several indictments, but all of those indictments were quashed politically, and not one of the banksters went to jail. So that is certainly that is that is one element, of course, in the motive over the war. By the way, JD, before we get through this program, I should mention that on my website, jamesproloff.com, I have an exhaustive article on the Lusitania. Mm-hmm. It is called False Flag at Sea. And if people go there, all the details we're talking about today and many more are included there. It's footnoted, and I give people additional references that they can go to. But the best book, as far as I'm concerned, there are many books on the Lusitania, but the Truther's book, as far as I'm concerned, the one that really critically analyzes it, is called The Lusitania, published in 1972 by Colin Simpson of Great Britain. Mm-hmm. Best book I've ever read on it. Out of print, but well worth reading.
Outstanding. I do want to recommend everybody out there, as well as going to jamesperloff.com, check out his books, ladies and gentlemen. Truth is a Lonely Warrior is probably my very favorite. We've had him on the program. We've talked about some of his other books, The Tornado in a Junkyard and The Case Against Darwin, both very, very interesting. But as far as the truth movement goes, this Truth is a Lonely Warrior is an absolute perfect book to give somebody who is just starting to kind of get into the truth movement, because you go over a lot of these incidents. You do a great job of going back through all of the wars that the United States has been involved in. And it's a book that I highly, highly recommend, and one of the ones that I loan out at great frequency. So if you're out there listening and you want to get a good premise on what we're talking about today in a more general sense in terms of false flags going on throughout history, Truth is a Lonely Warrior is not going to be a book that you do not want to have in your collection, ladies and gentlemen. So I just want to make sure that you guys understand just about how much good material James Perloff has produced. Now, James, we were talking quite a bit about the British side of things, how much Britain really wanted to get involved with the war, but we haven't really touched a lot on Mr. Woodrow Wilson. And you want to talk a little bit about how the American side of the manipulation to get us into war kind of came into existence?
Yeah. Well, when the Lusitania went down, it was anticipated that there would be a declaration of war. And let me just quote you a cablegram that Walter Hines Page, this is the guy who wrote to his son predicting that the ship would be sunk, May the 8th, the day after the Lusitania was sunk, he sent a cablegram to Wilson. Here it is, quote, "The freely expressed universal opinion," meaning here in Britain, "is that the United States must declare war or forfeit European respect. So far as I know, this opinion is universal. If the U.S. does come in, the moral and physical effect will to bring peace quickly and to give the U.S. a great influence in ending the war and in so reorganizing the world as to prevent its recurrence," unquote. Incredible cablegram, because this is 4 years before the Paris Peace Conference. He's already foreshadowing Wilson going to the League of Nations to create an organization that would prevent the allegedly prevent the recurrence of war. So this whole thing is planned. The U.S. Embassy in Germany started shutting down. They were so confident there was going to be a declaration of war, but it didn't happen. What happened was Wilson sent an ultimatum after Lusitania went down, demanding that they cease all submarine warfare, which of course they couldn't do. That's the only effective counter they had to the British Navy.
Right.
And so the Germans made a very reasonable reply. They replied pointing out that the Lusitania was a auxiliary cruiser, that it was carrying contraband. Uh-huh. They even sent Wilson a copy of Churchill's orders to merchant captains, ordered them to ram and sink U-boats. One of the U-boat commanders had found this on one of the merchant ships. So they gave a photostatic copy to Wilson. And on top of that, they apologized and said they would make good any loss to American life. And you obviously couldn't declare war under those conditions. But I should mention something else, which is that I'm sure you've heard of this. The Germans, before the Lusitania sank, attempted to publish an ad warning Americans not to board her.
That's right.
I've got a copy of the ad, and I'll read it. It's, "Notice, travelers intending to embark on the Atlantic voyage are reminded that a state of war exists between Germany and Great Britain, that the zone of war includes the waters adjacent to the British Isles, that in accordance with formal notice given by the Imperial German government, vessels flying the flag of Great Britain are liable to destruction in those waters, and that travelers sailing in the war zone on ships of Great Britain do so at their own risk," signed the Imperial German Embassy. Wow. Now, they submitted this, and asked it to be placed in 50 newspapers right next to the Cunard sailing notices so that Americans would know not to board it. But a State Department officer suppressed the ad. It wasn't published. And when the Germans realized it hadn't been published, they sent a representative to the Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan, who was very alarmed. He was an honest man. He immediately cleared it for publication, but it was getting late now. And he asked Woodrow Wilson, would he please send an alert to the American people not to board the Lusitania? He refused to do so. And it's been said that Woodrow Wilson wept quietly for several minutes after receiving the news that the ship had been sunk. But I should mention that after this, the Germans gave this very conciliatory reply to Wilson's ultimatum following the ship's sinking. Wilson then sent a very hypocritical reply to the Germans, which I'll quote, and he said, quote, the United States has enforced its statutes with scrupulous vigilance through its regularly constituted officials and is therefore able to assure the Imperial German government that it has been misinformed, unquote. Well, Secretary of State William Jennings Bryan was asked to sign this reply. He refused to do so because he knew it was dishonest. He knew that the Lusitania was carrying munitions, and he resigned at that moment as Secretary of State. He could no longer stomach the hypocrisy of Wilson, his double standard of allowing the British to violate cruiser rules by punishing Germany for doing the exact same thing in retaliation. And he was replaced as Secretary of State by Robert Lansing, a top insider who'd already been used by Wilson to navigate around William Jennings Bryan. And I should mention that Lansing's nephews were Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles. You know, Alan Dulles was president of the Council on Foreign Relations, head of the CIA, and John Foster Dulles was just about everything from head of the Rockefeller Foundation to a founding member of the Council on Foreign Relations. It just his resume just goes on and on as far as in.
This is unbelievable, James. Some of these correlations, I mean, with the Council on Foreign Relations, this is just absolutely astounding to me. One of the questions that I've got. Do you think Germany sunk this ship based on a hunch, or do you believe that somebody gave Germany information that there were, in fact, munitions on this boat?
Well, it was known that every month the ship was sailing back and forth loaded with munitions. I am sure that Walter Schweiger, commander of the U-20, didn't know the specifics on this tour because he'd been in the South Irish Sea out of radio range with Germany, but he knew that this was a legitimate target.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about what happened after the fact, because obviously there had to have been a massive cover-up operation, and I think that probably is a similar operation to what we've seen in just about every other false flag attack. So do you want to talk a little bit about who covered it up and how they did so?
This is where it gets very nasty. Now, the British knew that somebody's head would have to roll since the ship had been sunk, and the guy whose head they picked was the captain of the Lusitania, William Turner. Mm-hmm. So Richard Webb, who was director of the Admiralty's Trade Division, he wrote a report summarizing findings about the Lusitania. Here's what he wrote, quote, one is forced to conclude that he, Captain Turner, is either utterly incompetent or he's been gotten at by the Germans, unquote. Now, Admiral Lord Fisher, First Sea Lord, wrote on this report concurring with Webb. He said, quote, Turner is not a fool but a knave. I feel absolutely certain that Captain Turner of the Lusitania is a scoundrel and been bribed. I hope that Captain Turner will be arrested immediately after the inquiry, whatever the verdict of finding may be, unquote. And he also wrote this on the report. He said, quote, ought not Lord Mersey to get a hint, unquote. Lord Mersey was the wreck commissioner. He was the judge who was to oversee the hearing, as he'd overseen the hearing on the Titanic sinking. Now, Winston Churchill read this report, and he said, quote, we shall pursue the captain without check, unquote. And then Webb wrote to Lord Mersey, and he said, quote, I am directed by the Board of Admiralty to inform you that it is considered politically expedient that Captain Turner, the master of the Lusitania, be most prominently blamed for the disaster, unquote. So here we have the justice overseeing the hearing. He's already been told before the hearing begins who you are to find guilty.
Well, and what's astounding to me is that this Turner guy replaced the other captain when the other captain wouldn't acquiesce to transporting munitions. So obviously, Captain Turner wasn't necessarily a bad guy in the eyes of these banking interests, right? I mean, he was kind of the guy that tapped to go and do this exact incident, and now they're throwing him under the bus?
Yeah, he had he was a very able seaman. He'd been decorated for bravery several times for saving lives in the past. He certainly was not part of this conspiracy, but they wanted a scapegoat. But here's the thing. At the hearing, Lord Mersey did quash all evidence of the cargo. He didn't ask Turner what his cargo was, and he accepted an unsworn statement from Dudley Field Malone saying that all the cargo was acceptable under U.S. law to be transported on a passenger ship. But he did not crucify Captain Turner. He didn't go after him. He refused to hold him liable. He made some criticism of him, but he did not nail him to the board as Churchill had hoped. And the reasons for that, number one, Churchill was already sacked as head of the Admiralty by the time he rendered his finding because of the Gallipoli campaign, which had turned out to be a disaster. He was sacked as head of the Admiralty. And also, no evidence was produced in court that actually showed incompetence or knavery on the part of Captain Turner. Now, I want to mention how this connects to the future, okay? We've done shows on Pearl Harbor. After Pearl Harbor, when Churchill's distant cousin, Franklin D. Roosevelt, was president and withheld his foreknowledge of the Pearl Harbor attack from our commanders in Hawaii, General Walter Short and Admiral Husband Kimmel, FDR knew, of course, and you can see my article on my website, jamesperloff.com, called Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt's 911. Roosevelt knew through decoded naval intercepts, decoded diplomatic intercepts and personal warnings that attack was coming, but then he decided to follow his cousin's example. He figured, well, Turner was scapegoated for the Lusitania, I'll scapegoat Kimmel and Short. And so he appointed a commission called the Roberts Commission. This is Pearl Harbor now we're talking.
Right.
And the Roberts Commission exonerated Washington of any wrongdoing at Pearl Harbor, and it laid all the blame on Kimmel and Short. But this time it backfired, J.D., because what happened was Kimmel and Short were fighters, and they defended themselves vigorously, even though Short died in 1949. Kimmel went on to write a book called Admiral Kimmel's Story in 1955, published, of course, by a small press, ignored by the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. But he kept fighting, and his family, both officers' families, carried on that fight. And I have to tell you something, J.D., that the Illuminati, they learn from lessons. And I believe that one reason, 911, you know, we often talk about the fact, 911, nobody at NORAD or the Air Force was demoted or blamed for the fact that, you know, 35 minutes after the second tower was hit, why was the Pentagon struck by an airplane allegedly? Shouldn't we have had fighters over Washington, D.C. deployed? Mm-hmm. How come NORAD didn't spot that plane? When it's entrusted with national defense, nobody got demoted or blamed. And I think that it was the lesson of Pearl Harbor, where they said if we blame these local military commanders, they could come back and bite us. But, FDR did it because, Turner had not, gone after, the Admiralty. One reason being, though, he didn't get the blame. Well, Lord Mersey laid off of him. And I should mention that Lord Mersey, who oversaw the Titanic inquiry, resigned from any further justice duties after the Lusitania hearing. He declined any fee for his work on the Lusitania, and he said the Lusitania was what we called a damned dirty business.
Wow. How do you say guilty conscience, man? Unbelievable. And, you know, what I feel like the big lesson that they've learned here, James, is that now it's a lot easier to blame some unknown boogeyman that possibly lives in a cave out in, Pakistan.
Yeah.
But seriously, right? You think about all the false flags that we've been in now. They haven't named anybody in terms of somebody that we could actually put on trial or capture. You know, it's all these, far away people from far away places that we just can't quite get our fingers on. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, you know, one of the Tsarnaev brothers survived from the Boston Marathon and going on trial. Looks like they're not bothering with that anymore. So with the Charlie Hebdo, those Henry Macko, who I write for his website, had predicted while these guys were on the allegedly on the loose that they will never turn up alive. And of course, they were shot dead, no trial. And then this latest incident in Garland, Texas, as soon as the news report is out, the guys are already dead. There's no trial. There's nobody who can be asked a question. I think they want to steer clear of courtrooms. I think they just want, a media story. The guys did it. They're dead now. End of story. Accept what we tell you.
Mm-hmm. So given everything that we know about, the name of the game so far and which way the wind is blowing, do you feel like we are in knee deep in false flag territory? And if you did, what type of false flag do you think we might predict here?
Well, there's no question that the rate of false flags has really accelerated, and it seems that the attempt to bomb Assad fizzled out. They wanted to bomb him over the use of sarin, the chemical
chlorine.
Weapons, right?
Yeah, the chlorine
So
gas.
They went back and said, okay, now we're not after Assad, now we're after Assad's enemies who were supporting the year before. The ISIS guys, we got to get them now, and those ISIS beheading videos seem to work on public opinion. These guys stick with the winners, so they went with more ISIS, more ISIS, more ISIS. And so you had Charlie Hebdo, and you had this Garland, Texas, and you had the Ottawa event, and you had one in Australia, right? And you had one in the Netherlands, and again and again, you see these incidents being created to have a police state. The last I heard was that the French were going to sort of indefinitely keep military police on the streets.
Yeah.
So they're creating sort of a global police state through these wag the dog type of events that are taking place. And I don't know what the next one might be. That is always impossible to predict. Who knew? Not many of us knew that 9/11 was going to happen, certainly before that came as a shock to so many of us. So we don't know. But we do know that these guys are evil. And time again, whether there's a sinking of the Maine, the sinking of the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, they are willing to sacrifice a lot of the lives to get what they want, but they're also willing to simply fake something on video like the movie Wag the Dog if they think they can deceive people that way.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree with that too. Where I was thinking about going though was this Yemen situation. I'm not sure if you saw this Yemen, been following the Houthi rebels and things in Yemen, but I'm kind of the opinion we might have just seen another false flag occur in the Middle East over the weekend, because allegedly, the Saudi Arabian coalition had stopped its aerial campaign for about 12 hours. Apparently nobody actually picked up the news that they had restarted their campaign. And they had also pulled together all of their National Guard troops for a supposed or alleged potential invasion into Yemen. And then just yesterday, the news has come out, and again, this is from a Saudi-controlled news agency, that these Houthi rebels were launching artillery over into Saudi Arabia, and they hit a couple of key facilities and killed a couple of people. So I looked at that, and I thought, well, isn't that convenient that here we are already geared up, we've already got the National Guard ready to go in, all we really need is some sort of incident, and I'm thinking that that's probably what we saw there in Yemen. What do you think about that, James?
Well, I think that anybody who believes that story probably also believes that the Iraqi soldiers took Kuwaiti babies out of incubators and dumped them on the floor. And it's been so many of these, it's evident that it's almost like there's a script team somewhere that is sending out instructions on what's to be done, crisis actors to be employed if that's what the particular scenario calls for. It's like there's a gigantic movie-making company that's out there orchestrating things in conjunction with intelligence agencies to bring about the evolution of this new world order that the banksters want, where there'll be this single currency and single world government and people terrified into accepting it.
Mm-hmm. I would look at Tavistock as being probably the originator of that exact agenda. Have you done a lot of research into Tavistock?
Well, I've certainly read the book on Tavistock by Dr. John Coleman, formerly of MI6, the British CIA, and certainly that seems to be at least when at the time you wrote that book, that was the number one think tank. That would be interesting if, in fact, some of the script writing is an orchestration is, in fact, originating from there.
It wouldn't surprise me with their correlation to the psychological or the psychiatry movement going back even way before, World War I. They really had the mission of trying to, I think they called themselves sociatrists, I can't say it right, but, people who are spending all of their time and energy trying to inflict societal wills on the rest of us using psychology. And, these false flag attacks acts that are trying to use humanitarian style crises to get all of us emotionally invested in these decisions. You know, when we sink the Lusitania, Americans are going to get emotionally invested and we're going to go and support the war. When 2 or 19 guys in a cave someplace happen to fly planes into towers, you know, we're going to get emotionally invested in that. And I think the Tavistock organization probably has a lot to do with developing those emotional investments in all of these humanitarian style crises. But I guess there's another show in there someplace that we'll have to do in the future, James.
Yes, and just as they need military and just as they need intelligence services, they also need a propaganda organ that can develop these ideas that, just as you say, they gauge public opinion. They look at public opinion polls. They see what people are afraid of, what people are concerned about, and then they tailor make an incident. If one trick doesn't work, then they reassess public opinion and come up with something stronger. You know, if the original World Trade Center bomber didn't give you homeland security, you try Oklahoma City. If Oklahoma City doesn't give you homeland security, you bump up another big notch to 911 and make sure that you really get it this time.
Mm-hmm. And which has got me really afraid for the future. I guess there's what I want to ask you a little bit about, James. I know we're kind of going off subject here, but this whole Jade Helm thing, are you picking up anything about this? Are you concerned about this Jade Helm military exercise that's carrying on later this summer?
I haven't studied, I'm sure, as even as much as many of your listeners are. I've been kind of getting ready for several Lusitania shows over the past week and doing some writing on other subject areas as well of interest, but I have been following it some, and it certainly seems to me when you have a gigantic movement of troops and military equipment that there's obviously a reason for it, and we know that we don't need it for genuine national self-defense. So I'm not sure what they're up to, but I do recall also, JD, that there have been times in the past when we received warnings in the truth movement that some sort of operation was taking place, that there was a danger that they were going to be opening up FEMA camps and we'd soon be in them, and those didn't pan out. So you don't always know. Maybe this is just a trial run for something, or maybe they really have something big that they're planning. But without being a fly on the wall in their planning rooms, it's certainly impossible to know for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think the long story short, though, is that everybody still needs to be vigilant. You know, we can look back through history. Mm-hmm. We can see all of these particular agents and agencies doing exactly what we see them doing now. And, you know, do you have any – we've only got about a minute left, James, but what would you tell people out there in terms of staying vigilant about what's going on?
Continue to use the internet while it's accessible, to listen to shows like this, and to stay informed and to prepare for the future. And to consider what this means also just eternally. You know, this is not about just bankers who want to get rich. You know, people don't spread chemtrails in the sky and kill people. There's no profit margin in that. This is about more than some rich bankers wanting to get more rich. Mm-hmm. This is a Luciferian agenda. And some of the people like Ted Gunderson and John Coleman, and even going back to William Guy Carr, have affirmed that, yes, these people are Satan worshipers. There's a spiritual element here, and we need to really reflect on this in our own relationship with God as we consider these events.
Man, I could not have said that better myself. Absolutely outstanding. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today, James.
Thank you, JD.
You take care, brother, and be good out there. Ladies and gentlemen, please do go check out jamesperloff.com. And again, I do want to recommend my favorite book that he's produced, The Truth is a Lonely Warrior. If you've got people in your family that you still have not been able to bring over onto our side of the fence yet, get this book and put it in their hands, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to be doing a service not only to them, but for the rest of the truth movement as well, and have the ancillary benefit of supporting a fantastic guy like James Perloff. So that is it for the program today. We are done and out of time. I will see you guys again tomorrow when Kenneth Shorten Jr. will be joining us. Stay tuned right now for the fantastic Roger Sales show coming up next, and do tune in for the KBS show this afternoon.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.